Welcome to Harmony Primitive Baptist Church. This is Elder Neil Phelan, Jr., preaching for regular Sunday morning services.
Last night I was reading and got great comfort myself from the book of Job. So if you have your Bibles, I would like to turn over to the book of Job. As a pastor, a lot of times people will come to me and when they're cast down or they're going through a crisis in their life, and I believe that's part of the role of a pastor, is to try to encourage people and help them in time of need. And of course, as pastors, we have times of need as well. But when people come to me and they ask me something they can read or something they might be able to meditate upon, I don't send them to the secular bookstore, and I don't send them to self-help places. I don't tell them to listen to John MacArthur or some of the preachers of the day. I always tell them to get out the book of Job and read through that. And one of the reasons that I do is because I know that no matter how bad our case may be, no matter how cast down we may be in our own experience, that none of us have ever had it as bad as Job. And so I send people there to read. And one of the things that we need to remember is that when we read the scriptures, whether it's the book of Job or any other place in the Bible, that we are to become that character. If we're to get the best out of the reading of scripture, then we are to place ourselves in the place of that other person. And I believe that's the way the Bible is designed, because these other saints are just like you and I. You recall what James said about Elias when he prayed. He said Elias was a man with subject to like passions as we are. Yet he prayed and the heavens shut out the rain for 3 years, 3.5 years, something like that. But his point was is that these old patriarchs, regardless of who they were, whether it was James or Job, that they were just like us. They were just human beings. And so you and I, as we read the scriptures, it is God's design for us to become that very person, to live their life and to live out their experience in the scriptures. And so when we're cast down and we're going through a dark time, let us pick up the book of Job and let us become him. He was a man of great patience, a man of godliness. As we read, we're going to read the dialogue here today. And that's what I want to just look at, is the dialogue between Satan and God and Job, the three main characters here in the first part of this book. But his patience and his godliness was so great that 1,500 years later, a man by the name of James would write, "You have heard of the patience of Job." You'll find that recorded in the book of James. And now about 2,000 years after James penned those words, you and I are still looking at the patience of Job. He is a great example for every one of us. He is a person that we can look to no matter how young or how old we may be. He is a person that we can look to and we can draw strength from his war with Satan and life and disappointments and heartaches and losses and tragedies. He is a person that we can look to and say, "He got through it. God got him through it. God will get me through it." He is a person that we can look at and that we can remember, and we can look into the scenes and behind the scenes of his trial. This is one of the great things about the Bible, is that it allows us to pull back the curtain and to be able to see what's going on behind the scenes and the trials of people's lives. We see the end story of Job. We know what happened in the end. But remember, in the life of Job, during this experience that he goes through, he didn't know what the end was going to be. And I know you this morning, whatever trial you may be going through in your own experience, and whatever tragedy you may have experienced or may be thinking you might be experiencing or you're going to experience, that the Lord sees the end from the beginning. And so let us remember that the Lord is there with us all the time. So let's look at the dialogue here, because it is beautifully laid out here in the scriptures and gives us an opportunity to see what's going on behind the scenes. So we're going to just read through part of this morning and look at some of the dialogue. "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil." Now, from the very beginning of this, we understand that this was a good man. And already, the scene is set, that we already know that whatever is about to happen to this man is not based upon something that he has done. We know that God is not going to punish him for being a good man that feared God and eschewed evil. And that's going to be one of the downfalls of his friends we're going to see a little bit later. But that tells us something great in our wisdom concerning God. And that is that a lot of times when we go through our trials and our troubles, that it is not always directly proportional to the way that you and I have sinned. Sometimes you and I can have a guilt complex when we don't really need to have one. But I will say this, that when we're going through trials and troubles, if there is something going on in our lives, there is never anything wrong with doing a maintenance check and finding out and seeking the Lord's face and finding out if perhaps there is something that we're being punished for and that the Lord's trying to get our attention. Now, we do a lot of maintenance work on our cars when they really don't even need it. We might change the oil. We might see if it needs an air filter or something like that. And that surely doesn't do the car any harm. So it doesn't hurt us when we're going through trials and troubles in our lives to do a maintenance check and find out maybe that there is some changes that we need to make in our lives. And may I say that even though we may not be being punished at that point for any particular thing, I'm sure that in every one of our lives there are some things that can be changed in our lives. But we learn here from the very beginning that Job was an upright man, perfect God, which means complete man, and that he feared God eschewed evil. Now, you may be saying this morning, Job got through his circumstance because he was such a good man. Well, this isn't written for us to read it and say, well, Job got through it because he is a great man or a great person. I'm not that good, so I may not make it through mine. That's not the thought that the Lord wants us to draw from this. Doesn't matter. None of us are perfect and we all are flawed. We all have sins. And that doesn't mean at all that the Lord's not going to bless us to get through our trials. He got Mary Magdalene through her trials. The Lord cast many devils out of her. Got the Apostle Paul through his trials. The Apostle Paul put Christians to death. And he got many people through their trials and troubles who I'm sure were worse than most of us that are here today. And another thing about him being good and eschewing evil is for us to also remember that even though we may not be as good as Job, that we are all subject to trials and tribulations as well. And it seems that Job was very blessed of the Lord. He was born to him 7 sons, 3 daughters. He had 10 children, and God had blessed him in a very special way. Not only were his children healthy and happy and around him, but he was also a very wealthy man. You see that his substance was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses. A very great household, a lot of servants that Job had to tend to his great farm, his acreage, and everything that he owned. And he was a very wealthy man. You would think sometimes in our lives when we get a little bit further along in our own experience that we get to some place in our life that we are no longer subject to falling, subject to loss, subject to maybe poverty or losing everything that we have. But no matter how old we may get in our own experience, and no matter how secure we may think that we are, no matter how secure we may think we may have lodged away our stocks and our bonds and our investments, we never get to that place where that the Lord cannot touch us or that Satan cannot have his way with us and bring us to a place that we find ourselves in great need. His children apparently loved one another. I love the story that we have here before us about the sons. There's 7 sons, and apparently each one of them made supper one night of the week. And so on Monday night, one son had supper, Tuesday night another one, and they all invited all the brothers and sisters to be with them. All the sisters and all the other brothers would come over that night. And so the family looks like a very loving family that they have here. And things seem to be going very well. And Job, we find that was a faithful father. In verse 5, you'll find that Job prayed for his children. That's another good mark about Job. He was a praying man. He prayed for his children, and just in case his children cursed God, Job was careful to offer sacrifices up on their behalf, that God would forgive them for anything that they might be doing. And this Job did on a continual basis, offering sacrifices to God on behalf of his children. Now, you would think a good man, an upright man, praying like this, offering sacrifices to his children, that surely nothing bad could happen to Job or to his children. But you see, there's something that goes on behind the scenes here. And that is that here is a good man, and if there's anybody that Satan wants to destroy, it is a good man. And you may not be as good as Job this morning, but allow me to say that if you are a child of God, then Satan wants to destroy you. That's something that we need to always have before us. Peter says that Satan is a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And if there's anybody that he wants to destroy, it's the testimony of Christians in this world. We were talking this morning when some of us got to church in the front of the church. And a lot of y'all are like me. When you drive past the church, you're counting the cars. You're comparing our cars to everybody else's cars and to see how well the churches are faring by counting the cars. And we noticed this morning that at most places that we passed by, being a cold day, that the cars were greatly diminished this morning and people didn't turn out as they usually do. And so we were hoping for a good congregation, which we have. Thankful for that. But Satan is having his way in the world today in a lot of ways. I mentioned that in my church newsletter this last week, that we're living in a day of great falling away. This is the 2:30 hour of the day in the kingdom. We're all tired. There's no miracles going on. There's no revival going on. There's no great outpouring of God's Spirit. We don't find people weeping in the pews. We don't find people coming down by the droves wanting to join the church. We don't see the great things happening that have happened in this country in days gone by. And so I draw from that conclusion, not the fact that I am a pessimist, but the fact that I must be a realist. I must look around me and see what's really going on, that the love of many has waxed cold, as Jesus said that it would do. And so we're living in a day of falling away. Well, all of that should make us all even more ardent in our religious exercises to be faithful to the house of God. And that's what I've called upon our church to be in the year to come. But to say this is what I'm trying to say is that Satan wants to destroy God's testimony in the earth. And here is a man that shone a great light in this community in which he lived. His name was Job. Everybody knew the man. Everybody knew that he was successful. And one of the things that people hated was the fact that he was not only successful, but he was a God-fearing man. Those are two things that you rarely see in the world. When you see a person that has money, or they have wealth, and they have power, and they have influence, most very rare for you to see a person like that, that is a child of God and shines a light for the person of Jesus Christ. That's why the apostle wrote in 1 Corinthians, not many wise, not many noble are called. That's a very rare thing, because the allurements of the world tend to draw people away from God and from his house. And sometimes the more famous people become, the more they want to rub shoulders with the rich and famous. And you might say, the less worth they see in the people, humble people of God. Now, here behind the scenes in verse 6, we get to see what's going to go on. And as we read this, I want you to be the subject of Satan's remarks here, because you probably have been. And if you haven't been in the past, you probably will be at one time. Because if you're honoring the Lord in your life, and I even say this for young people, because if you're honoring the Lord as a young person, as a teenager, in school, high school, junior high, in college, if you're honoring the Lord, I can tell you there's great peer pressure out there. And if you're doing what is right, then Satan may just want to have his way with you. And so there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And the sons of God are usually spoken of as the angels themselves. And so they come before the Lord, and Satan came among them. Now, that scripture a lot of people have had trouble with. We were talking about it last night. Marilyn said, "I don't think Satan was in heaven." Well, it doesn't say he was in heaven. It just said they presented themselves before the Lord. The Lord is omnipresent. He is everywhere present. And I can't explain to you all of the nuances of this meeting. All I know is that they met and they had conversations. So where it happened, I do not know. But apparently the Lord and the angels, some of the angels, and Satan was allowed to come into this conversation. And the Lord has something he is going to say to Satan. And you might say or think it like this: he couldn't wait to say what he is about to say to Satan, because he's got one up on Satan, on this particular person, and he can't wait to rub it in Satan's face. And so here he comes. Satan comes among them, and the Lord starts out with what you might say is small talk. And he says, "Whence comest thou, In other words, what you been up to? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down within it. Now, they both knew that. That's just, you might say, small talk. But it tells us a little bit about Satan himself, and that is that he is not omnipresent. God is everywhere present, but Satan must walk to and fro on the earth. He goes here and he goes there. He causes trouble here. I mean, now you can see places of great influence sometimes when you see great evil compacted somewhere in the earth, or you might, or concentrated somewhere. And then God draws out this card and he brings up the person of Job. Now, Job is all right over there. He's doing fine. His kids are doing good. He's prospering. And he's making his money. He's living his life. He's visiting the widows. He's doing everything a man ought to do. But God is the one that brings Job into the midst of this conflict. Charles Haddon Spurgeon put together a series of messages that he had delivered from the book of Job. And we've got it in our basement. It's called The Suffering of Man and the Sovereignty of God. And in the midst of all of this, if there is anything we're about to see a man who is suffering, and we're going to see a God who is sovereign. A God sovereign in the life of Job, and sovereign in the person of Satan. And so the Lord brings Job into the midst of this conflict and says, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect man and upright, one that fears God and escheweth evil? Now, when he said that, it was like slapping Satan in the face. He hated that man. He had done everything he could to destroy Job. He had placed women in front of him. He had placed rich people in front of him. He had placed every possible thing in front of this man to destroy him. Yet Job was an upright man that feared God and eschewed evil. Satan knew it. He had gone somewhere else. Remember, Peter said to resist Satan, he'll flee from you. And so Satan had gone off and left this man alone because he was wasting his time. He wasn't getting anywhere with him. And so he goes somewhere else, but God brings him right back in his face and reminds him that here is a man that you had no success with, and he's my man. Well, Satan then makes two statements. One of them is true, and one of them is false. He said, doth Job fear God for nothing? Or for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he has on every side? Hast thou blessed the work of his hands? His substance is increased in the land. But put forth your hand now, and touch all that he has, and he will curse thee to thy face. The first statement he makes is true. God had blessed Job. He had put a hedge about him. And he had blessed the works of his hands. If you and I have anything today, we will attribute it to the grace of God. No matter how smart we are, no matter how hard we have worked, no matter how much that we have tried to, build up our own coffers, we would have done nothing without God opening the door for us. He's the one that gave us anything that we have, whether it's two hands to work, two eyes to see, a brain to use. God gave us that in the first place, and then he must have opened every door that you and I ever walked through to have anything that we have today. You look back in your life, if you've been around a while, and you'll see the Lord was there orchestrating things, opening doors, and doing things from us. And if you're like I am, I look back in my life, and I see a lot of great doors that God opened of opportunity. And I didn't really realize that God had opened those doors, and I allowed some of them to close and even close some of them myself. When if I would have been a wise man, I could have done much better had I seen the Lord working in my life and the things that he was doing for me at that time. But that's what the gray hair is called. The hoary head has wisdom. And so we get old and we look back and we see that there were some things going on there that we really didn't know, that God was there. But the second thing that he says is not right. He said, put your hand forth, touch him and all that he has, and he'll curse you to his face. That's a false statement. The challenge has been made. God has brought up his man. Satan has taken the bait. And the challenge is laid down. And the challenge is based upon the faith of one of the Lord's people. Now, if you have yourself in this story right now, then whatever trial you're going through in your life, it's hinging upon your faith and the perseverance in your own life that Brother Mike spoke about this morning, that you and I are to continue to persevere. So the Lord says, okay, the challenge is laid down. Here are the ground rules. So the Lord is sovereign, and Satan can only do what God allows him to do to you or to I or to anybody else or to this globe. And so he says, all that he has is in your power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. And Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. So the ground rules are this. You can take anything that he's got, but don't touch the man personally. You keep his health. You keep his life. You cannot touch him. But you can take anything else he's got. I was talking to somebody one time and they were talking about the book of Job. And they said, you know, the Lord said that they could do anything to Job he wanted to, but he couldn't take his soul. And I said, no, I'm sorry. The soul was never under question. The soul of Job belonged to the Lord. And that never came up in the conversation. And Satan knew that right well. So the soul of the Lord's people can never be removed. Now, how long do you think Satan wasted to get down to planet Earth to carry out the misery that he wanted to inflict upon the soul of Job? He didn't waste any time, I want to tell you. I believe he went straight down. I don't think he combed his hair. I don't think that he went back and changed his clothes. You know I'm kidding, but I don't think he wasted any time to get down to inflict this misery upon this man that he hated with all of his passion. And so it says, a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, there came a messenger to Job and said, and here comes four messengers to Job. The first messenger tells him that you've lost the ox and the asses. And before he even gets through speaking, another one comes down and said, the fire of God's fallen from heaven. You've lost your sheep and your camels. And another one comes along and says that you've lost the camel's necks. And then the next one comes along and brings the news that I believe is the most heart-wrenching to the servant of God. He says, the sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in your oldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, smote the four corners of the house. It fell upon the young men. They're dead, and I'm the only one left to escape to tell you. Now, how would you respond when you got news like this? Most of us have had bad news in our lives. Most of us have gone through difficult times in our lives. Most of us know that we could go home from this meeting and we could get some bad news. Where none of us are exempt from bad news or from heart-wrenching circumstances or for dealing with something we don't want to deal with. And probably most of us in our minds right now are thinking about that one thing that we surely don't want to hear about when we get home today. But Job heard it. He heard it. It was told him the worst news that anybody could ever hear. Now, his children weren't sick. They were dead. And it wasn't one of his children that had died. It was all 10 of them. He didn't lose part of his income. He didn't have a stock fall, crash. He lost everything. So he has no money. He has, I guess he still has his house, and he's got his wife, we're going to see. But he has no income, no money, and his children are dead. What would you do? Well, Job saw it as a time to worship the Lord. As I mentioned a few Sundays ago, which is something that's difficult for us, but the time of the greatest loss is the time that we have the opportunity to give God the greatest glory. Because we must see the sovereignty of God in the midst of our afflictions. That is the problem that you and I have down here. Since we cannot see God in person, we always try to detach God from the problem that you and I are facing, or from the trial that we're experiencing. It usually runs like this in our minds. Oh, God is a good God. So this evil thing is happening to me surely can't have anything to do with a good God. After all, God is there to answer prayers. God is there to give us things. God is there to do good things for us. God is there to do all of these things that you and I in our mind think that God's supposed to be doing if He's a good God. And if God has anything to do with this, surely there must be something wrong with the person of God. God cannot be good and allow evil things to happen to people. That's the problem that people have when we're talking about the sovereignty of God. Because you and I cannot see behind the scenes. But you see, the Lord is doing something here in this man's life that you and I get to draw the curtain back and see. And how many times is it in our own experience that when we get that news or we go through that bad trial, that we get totally undone? I mean, we are like a cat in a bag. We lose our tongue, our temper. We lose whatever it is that's composed of Christianity. And we assume that God has totally forgotten our own particular case. Now, either we fly to some extreme that it's some evil thing I've done and there ain't no way I'm going to ever get this right with God again and I'm going down for the count. But see, Job saw it as a time to worship. According to the scriptures, he arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshiped. His mantle was his robe, and that's the way that they did in the East. Usually you'll find all through the Old Testament that when something bad happened, they got some bad news, they would take their garment that they were wearing at that time, and they would just tear it to shreds. And a lot of times they'd go out in the backyard where the ash heap was, they'd take the ashes and dump it on their heads, and they would sit down there with torn garments and ashes on their head, a sign of humility, and they would begin to pray to the Lord. And Job, not only that, but he also shaved his head and fell down and worshiped. Now, there are a lot of ways that we worship the Lord. I mentioned that in the letter about that we can worship God, Bible study, preaching, singing, prayer groups, things like that. But here, the way that Job worshipped was through prayer and through praise. Notice what he said in verse 21. Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord took away, or hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now, notice his words. They are common sense words. There's something that you and I would all agree with this morning. That when you and I were born into this world, we didn't have any possessions, did we? We had parents that loved us. They probably put a diaper on us and maybe had some little shoes to put on us. But really, so far as owning any real estate or any money or anything, we didn't have anything when we were born into this world. And we all know something else. And this is something difficult for us when we get a little bit further along in life. But we also know that when we die, we're not taking any of it with us, are we? I mean, it doesn't matter how much you've amassed in this world. You could be the queen of Sheba. You could own the cattle of 1,000 hills. You could own all the gold of Ophir. But you're not going to take one penny with you. You know, the Egyptians thought that when they woke up into the next world, that they could take it with them. And so they buried them with their treasures. And that's why when they find these tombs of King Tut and people like that, they always find a lot of riches with them because they thought they were going to take it with them. Well, we know they're not going to because they've got it down in the museum right now. So we know that to be false, don't we? But yet in our own minds, you and I have a problem separating this life and our possessions. I'll encourage you this morning. This is probably a little bit off the subject, but you need to have a will made out. Because since you're not going to take your stuff with you, and you've got some relatives, you need to make sure that you know where your stuff is going. Because you don't want to go through a probate court or anything like that. And we've talked about that with my parents. I remember several years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, hoping that everything would be settled amiably, which it will. I asked my mother and father, I said, please make out your will, because they didn't have one. Well, my mother, as you might know, looked at me and she said, well, son, you think we're going to die tomorrow? And I said, no, I'm not hoping you're going to die tomorrow or in the next 20 or 30 years. But I said, one thing you need to remember, you are going to die one day and it could be tomorrow. You don't know. So I encouraged them to make out a will. And I tell you what, it was like pulling teeth to get them to do it, to write down all of the things. You know, today we're living in a day which people usually have accrued more than they did in days gone by. When my grandfather died, he didn't have anything but a few clothes and a piece of land. And probably his grandfather didn't even have that. But a lot of you here this morning, and those that might hear this message on the recorder, you've got some stuff. And everybody always says, well, my family, they'll never get into anything. My kids are better than that. They're never going to get into it over a few little trinkets and a ring and a piece of land. I want to tell you something. The depravity of human nature, it is always going to be a problem when it comes to passing things along to the next generation. And it may not be the loving brothers and sisters, but it may be an in-law or an outlaw or somebody like that. There can always be something in the midst of all of that that can cause a problem. Now, that's a side note. I digressed there a little bit on my message. But I'll just tell you that whatever you've got, you write it down and you name every specific thing you possibly can, because your family will want to know that it came from you and that you wanted them to have it. But Job began to worship the Lord, and he came to this stark reality that he didn't have anything when he came into the world. That whatever he had in the world, that God had given it to him. And here's another thing about that you and I can remember. That if God gave us all that we have today, and he did, isn't it God's business if he takes it all from us? We don't really own what we have. That's why when we talk about giving to the Lord or to his house, we try to remind you that your assets, your money or whatever you have, it's not really yours anyway. It all belongs to the Lord. Somebody might say, well, I think 10% of it is the Lord's. No, it's all the Lord's. 20% of it is the Lord's. 30% of it is the Lord's. Your house is the Lord's. Your clothes are the Lord's. We don't own anything here. It all belongs to the Lord. He's just letting us all use it while we're down here. And I thank God he's let us use a pretty good amount of it in this country after being over in the Philippines. Those people over there don't have near as many things to use that God's loaned them, that he's loaned us while we're here. So Job realized that whatever he had belonged to the Lord. He sinned not. He didn't charge God foolishly. He went out and he buried his children. He had their funerals. And I'm sure that he sat down and in some way, he tried to begin to accrue some kind of wealth again to make a living for him and his family. Well, the Lord's still meeting with his angels. And the meeting goes on and the meetings go on and the meetings go on. And Satan knows these meetings are going on. And he also knows he's been defeated once again by this great servant. And I know, as I read this, that I know I'm reading between the lines a little bit here. But Satan just hated to go back up there and face God again, because he knows what God is going to say to him. He's going to eat some crow because of Job. Because God got glory from a man that had lost everything. chapter 2, it says, "There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord." So here he is. He's ready to eat some crow. But I want to tell you something. He's willing to do it. And do you know why he's willing to do it? Because he hates you. And he in his pride has been debased. But he's willing to go there again. Because he wants one more shot at you. And so he comes back before God again. And the Lord said to Satan, verse 2, and he got great pleasure in this. "From whence comest thou?" Small talk. And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and from the earth and from walking down in it." Small talk. And then the Lord gets down to it. "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in all?" Don't you just love that? I just love reading those words and knowing that God is getting pleasure in this. "A perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and eschews evil. And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause." Take note. God says, "You moved me against him." Don't ever think in the sovereignty of God that God has just turned Satan loose on you. Because you see, the Lord is including himself in it. God himself is involved in this matter. Now that may bother some of you. It may bother you. And the language, you might say, doesn't really mean what I just said. But you know, I would much rather know that the Lord's holding me over the fire than somebody else. God is involved. This is what the Bible says. "You moved me against him without cause." Now, I'm not saying that God is the one that inflicted the punishment, that killed the children and did all of that. I'm saying that God brought Satan into the picture. And that in the fact that the Lord has allowed Satan to do this, that in one sense, the Lord knows about it. And that's what I'm trying to say in the best way that I can, that God knows about it. So no matter what you and I are going through, the Lord knows about it. And the fact that he knows about it means he allowed it. And the fact that he allowed it, in one sense, we know that he is in total control of it. So Satan answered the Lord and said, so here's another challenge he's going to throw down. Skin for skin. "Yea, all that the man hath will he give for his life." Now, this statement, let me say, I believe before Satan opens his mouth, has been well rehearsed. He's gone over and over in his mind, his little dark mind, how is it, what can I say to God when I get up there this next time that I can get at this man? So in his mind, he keeps going, oh. And so, I mean, when God gives him this, opens this door for him again, he's got this he knows what he wants to do to this man next, so he's well rehearsed. He says, "Skin for skin, all that the man hath will he give for his life. Put forth thine hand now, touch his bone and his flesh, he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said, "Behold, he is in thine hand, save his life." So he says, okay, let me touch him. You didn't let me touch him before, now let me touch him. Let me bring him some physical pain. Let me bring him some disease. Let me bring him some sickness, some suffering. And when I do that, he's going to curse you to your face. The challenge is laid down. Again, the ground rules are set. You can't kill him. Go ahead. Again, Satan wastes no time. He goes forth from the presence of the Lord, and he smote Job with boils from the sole of his foot unto the crown of his head. In other words, I think he did something that he could inflict the most pain on this man on a 24/7 basis. Now, if you've had one boil, you know what it must be like to have boils all over your body. I'm sure he had fever. It was difficult to eat. It was difficult to sit down. It was difficult to lay down. It was difficult to be comfortable. probably difficult to breathe. He was probably swollen, and I don't know what all was wrong with him. But he took a potsherd, which was a broken piece of pottery, and scraped himself and sat down among the ashes. He was in misery. Well, they say the way to bring a great castle down is to dig away at one of the corners. That's the way they brought many castles down a long time ago. When we were over in England, we visited the Tower of London. The castle there had they were round, and we asked them why they made the sides of the castle round, and they said so that people can't dig under them. So that's why they started building round walls. If they could dig under a corner of a castle, then the wall would collapse. And so it was with Job. Satan is going to dig under the corner. And so he comes and his wife now becomes affected. And here is a great man that Satan is going to destroy by degrees. And so he's going to turn the good woman that's married to him, that loved him when he had all of his possessions, loved the man when he was successful, loved the man when he had his sheep and his oxen and everything that he had, and he was in great health when he was combing his hair and he looked good. But now, he looks bad, he smells bad, he's lost everything he had. And his wife says, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." And Job said, "You speak as one of the foolish women. Shall we receive good at the hand of God and not receive evil?" And this did not Job sin with his lips. Stop and think. How many times have marriages fallen apart because people have gone through trials? Because a child's messed up? Because somebody has become ill, maybe terminally ill, and the husband or wife leaves them? You see, how well you handle things in your marriage has a lot to do with your personal integrity with God. And remember that Satan, many times, it may not be the outward thing that's really going on there. It may be the marriage he really wants to destroy. It may be the relationship, the beautiful relationship between a man and a woman that Satan is really after. And when he sees that he can't destroy that, he'll go somewhere else and bother somebody else. You see, there's always collateral damage when Satan comes along. He's like a hand grenade, and that whatever he can bring down, he'll take it down by degrees. And so, here is his wife. And of all the people that could have been a comfort to Job at this time, it surely could have been his wife. But rather than comforting the man, she encourages him just to curse God, give up, and die. And I'm sure in her mind that she thought, well, if you'll do that, I can at least go get somebody else and find somebody that's not sick like you are and move on along with my life. Well, you'd think that that would be the end of it. My time's about up. But still, Satan is mad. God is glad. And Job retains his integrity. But here comes his best friends. Well, these are not just friends. These are godly men. These are men that have had a relationship with God. And you would think of all the people that are going to comfort this man, surely these guys they'd have the answer. They'd be the ones that would be able to help him. So here they come, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, they made an appointment together to come and comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept and rent everyone his mantle, sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven, sat down upon the ground 7 days, 7 nights. None spake a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Initially, these men were doing a great thing. They were taking time away from their own lives to come and comfort their friend. And when they get there, they see him in this condition. They couldn't even recognize him. He was so bloated, so full of sores, so full of boils. And they just began to weep. They had great empathy for Job. Now, Job in chapter 3, I'm just going to close in just a moment because I wanted just you to see something here. Usually, when we are cast down and we're going through a problem, there's nothing better than to receive the consolation from friends. But you know, it doesn't matter how bad off we are in our experience. It's human nature for us that we really just don't like to hear complaints. No matter how bad off a person is, you know, nobody likes to be around complaining people. It's like one person said, we can have a pain, but we don't have to be a pain. But you know, it's not the way we ought to be. Because when people complain a lot of times, we ought to have a sympathetic ear, more of a sympathetic ear than what we usually do. So in chapter 3, Job begins to open up his mouth and he begins to complain. The reason he did it is not because he's going back on what he said so far. It's just because he wants his friends to console him. You know, that's what we usually do. The people we love the most when we're around them, somebody that we have respect for, somebody that we think will give us some kind of consolation, that's the person we usually will say something to because we want to get their two cents on it. Maybe they'll give us some insight we don't have. And maybe they will encourage us along the way. And so Job begins to curse his day. In other words, Job begins to say, I wish I'd never been born. Not only that, he goes on to say, we're not going to read all the dialogue. He didn't only say, I wish I'd never been born, but he also goes on to say that I have no purpose in life. I mean, he had purpose before, but now he says there's no need for me to even be around on planet Earth anymore. I really have no purpose. And so when he gets through with all of this, a life as the Temanite, he apparently is, you might say, the least mature of all of them. He really gets fed up with it first. And he begins to accuse Job that there's something that he has done that has brought God's wrath upon him. In verse 7 of chapter 4, he says, remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? And so he begins to make this judgment call upon the person of Job. You know, as I read that, is that not usually our own nature? I mean, let's be honest this morning. When something bad happens to somebody, is it not usually the first thing we do to make a judgment call and to say, you know, the reason that person is going through that trial is because of something they've done? That is human nature. It's called Phariseeism in the Bible. And it's the place that we usually find ourselves. And that gives us the ability to feel a little bit better than that person. It exonerates us from actually reaching out and helping somebody else because we can say they deserved it. So, gosh, you know, there's no need for me to try to help those people. They got what they had coming. And it also puts us in the position of God Himself. You know, there's plenty of suffering. We're going to go through plenty of trials, whether we do ever do anything wrong. If you're a faith person, one of those people that thinks that some of the things that you might hear from Joel Osteen and some of them out there, that if you just do everything right, if you just walk by faith all the time, and you're pleasing God all the time, you will not go through all of those trials and those problems. I don't think they've read the book of Job, do you? They must have missed that book somewhere when they were going to seminary. Because here is a man that did everything right, that God's placed him in a position of giving him the greatest glory by going through the deepest and the darkest suffering that we know that anybody has ever gone through. Well, we're not going to complete this book this morning, but you know one thing about it is the other men begin to come in and they adopt the same attitude as their friends and begin to accuse Job. And Job begins to talk about his friends and said, you know, such miserable comforters you are. But in the end, the Lord comes in a whirlwind and answers Job. He prayed for his friends. the Lord begins to speak about His sovereignty. He began to talk about the weather, about the stars. And Job finally said, I'll just put my hand over my mouth. I have no wisdom. And that's the way it is with us, isn't it? In the midst of our suffering and trials, we have no wisdom. Paul said his ways are past finding out. I mean, if we're going to go through trials because of something that we've done wrong, and we will, if we're chastened by the Lord, and then we're going to go through trials when we do what is right, you and I really don't have any way to judge what's going on all the time, do we? No.
Thank you for visiting Harmony Primitive Baptist Church. This has been Elder Neil Phelan, Jr., preaching for regular Sunday morning services.